Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. Tonight we're doing something a little different on the show. The fight to save Redbud Woods came to its conclusion on July 18th when the working group made an agreement with the administration, but not before it galvanized a very unique coalition of Cornell faculty, alumni, students, City of Ithaca officials, and citizens. Tonight we'll talk about the history of this issue and what the future might hold for this very unique coalition. My guests are Mary Tomlin, Alderwoman from Ithaca's 3rd Ward, Chair of the Planning, Neighborhoods, and Economic Development Committee. Tomlin was also a member of Ithaca's Landmarks Preservation Commission from 1991 to 2003. Another guest, Marty Hatch, professor in the Department of Music and Asian Studies at Cornell University. He's also the founder of Cornell's Gamelan Ensemble and a board member of Eco Village. He's also a member of the faculty working group formed to save Redbud Woods. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, I want to begin with an overview of the city's response once they learned that there was a movement afoot for Cornell to tear down Redbud Woods on University Avenue and build a parking lot.
Some of the first response came from citizens in the neighborhood, as well as from city boards and a city board, the Planning and Development Board, and the Ithaca Landmarks Preservation Commission. Back in July of 2002, neighbors in the University Hill area approached the Landmarks Commission with a request for a historic designation of a district there, which would encompass the site of the parking lot and a much greater area. They were asked if this was in response to the parking lot, and certainly that was of concern to them, but they indicated that the neighbors had talked about a historic district which would provide some protections and encouragement to historic development was thought about before that time.
Mm-hmm. What did the administration say in approaching the city in regard to why this was necessary? Did they have reasons?
I don't remember the specific comments of persons at that time. Mm-hmm. But it was a very general request. The initial focus of the historic district from their point of view was Len Rock, the former Ezra Cornell constructed home, and the Treeman properties on whose lawn the parking lot was intended to be built. And those are perhaps the most prominent architectural features and mm-hmm. with the greatest landscape development around them.
Mm-hmm. Marty, when did the faculty start getting involved in this? And what about your involvement?
Well, my involvement is in the Redbud faculty group is recent, since June, but faculty were quite involved much, much earlier than that. I mean, a key point would have been in 2004 when a group of, I believe it's 17 faculty members headed by Tom Eisner and...
Was it Jane Marie Law involved in that?
No, Carl Leopold. Uh-huh. Put together a letter which raised the question of the destruction of the woods as a important community issue, important to the community as a whole, not the Ithaca community, but Cornell's community, because it was indicative of a, I guess you could say, older model of development that didn't take into account the newer perceptions of the nature of the environment. I don't want to read more into that memo than is there, but it's available in the Redbud Woods site, mm-hmm. which is www.redbud.org,
I think so. So you were late to this. You came late to this issue in regard to thinking that you should save the parking lot, correct?
Right. I knew about it. I started becoming aware of it as an issue because I'm the building coordinator for the Southeast Asia Program Research Center, which is at 640 Stewart, which is in the sort of a larger, it's in one of the Treeman properties. Mm. It's a Henry Miller construction from, I guess, turn of the century. And it was, I guess, the most prominent building facing that that green and wooded area.
What took you a while to come around to this, though? Did you think it was necessary to build a parking lot? I'm sure that was what people were being told vehemently.
Yeah, well,
we have to do this.
We were told as a part of the West Campus Residential Initiative, which I actually like the idea of. I'm a campus fellow in one of the buildings there. I could comment on the architecture, but that's another matter. I like the idea of that notion of community for upperclassmen as a part of their educational experience. And I became aware of the so-called need for parking because they sent around a memo to people who were in the area. This was one of the matters that was being considered, parking, replacement of the parking that was at the corner of University and Stewart. And since the Kahan Center was backing up on the place where the Redbud Woods, which was one of the potential sites, they sent around that memo saying, you know, what's your response to that? So I wrote back and said, you know, I thought it was that they ought to really do a strong initiative to eliminate student parking in places like those lots adjacent to residential sites, because you know, my daughters had both gone to other schools where such a procedure was normal, that you'd have peripheral lots. I mean, they in their later years in the campus, they drove to the places and parked the car so they could get back and forth easily from their homes, but they were always not forced to, but just encouraged to, given places at a cost outside of the central campus area or even near the residences, and they left their cars there and they walked to their various buildings, mm-hmm. and took public transportation around, and so I thought, you know, it made sense for Cornell to start to keep thinking that way. I knew there were some initiatives in that direction, and in fact I've read documents about that, mm-hmm. That some of the justification for not having more parking, I think, is required of Cornell is that it's making efforts in that direction of, mm-hmm. discouraging student parking. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back in 2002, I said, you know, let's not have that. But they said, well, this is just interim, and we need it for some faculty positions, we need it for some staff positions, and we need it staff places, and we need it for construction, interim construction. And if we don't put construction parking there, we'll put it on the front lawn of, mm. the Kahan Center. Mm. And I thought, well, you know, that would be for 5, 6, 7 years, you know, a really ugly thing. And I said, as an interim, you know, maybe this is, you know, a reasonable solution. So I stuck with that even through all the times when the city was fighting against it. And I went to meetings with the architect, the landscape architects, about these view shed issues from the different buildings, 640 and 660. And what kinds of plantings could be done, and things like that. I had a daughter who was in landscape architecture at the time.
So you changed your mind about this at some point,
and then
right?
In June, I changed my mind. And I changed my mind because I saw that, indeed, what happened was during the time when they needed to have construction parking, they said, well, we'll put it on, since we can't put it down in Redbud Woods, we'll put it on the front lawn of the Kahan Center, and we'll also bulldoze the section between the Kahan Center and Len Rock, which is another wooded area, and we'll put it there. And by the way, the city wants to build a water tower here or there or someplace like that. So there were all kinds of things being thrown in, and I said, well, heck, you know, that's terrible, you know. And I wrote them letters saying, look, we've agreed to this thing. If you decide on it, Redbud Woods, you know, don't just, you know, throw your weight around doing these other terrible things. And then they came up with putting lots in front of the West Campus, temporary lots for construction. So I said to myself, you know, if they can find temporary lots for construction in front of West Campus so easily, why can't they find temporary lots for construction elsewhere? And what is the big pressure? And then I started reading things like this letter I was telling you about, Tom Eisner's letter with the 17 faculty. And
it finally grew to
it grew,
almost
grew
400.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, then eventually about yeah, there's a fabulous letter. I went through a count of that, and it showed me that that almost all of those people signing were full professors or associate professors, 370, 380.
Right.
And we subsequently put together another letter now, which we're sending to trustees, and we're putting together, but that's another chapter.
No, but we will talk about that later in the show. Mary, anything more to add about but the city's response? The city finally did sue Cornell, correct? Or Cornell sued the city in regard to this issue?
I should back up a bit. After there are two streams of city involvement in this. One involves the Planning and Development Board, which has site plan review responsibilities for projects like the West Campus Residential Initiative. And because of the scope of that project, they were required to consider an environmental impact statement. So that train of review in the Planning and Development Board was taking place in 2002. They had a public hearing, for example, on the draft environmental impact statement for the whole West Campus Initiative in September of that year. At the same time, there was the strain through the Landmarks Commission. When the neighbors of the site and persons living both on Stewart Avenue and on University Avenue came to the Landmarks Commission to seek a designation of a district. Staff on in the planning department for the city put in a request for funds from the city to sponsor a historic resources survey of the University Hill area. And those fundings were approved in late summer of 2002. So things were proceeding on two tracks. Then in 2003, the survey was completed of the historic district resources. There were public hearings held during the summer of 2003, and in July of 2003, Common Council voted that the University Hill Historic District be a local landmark district. So at the same time, there was a channel for historic preservation review. There was also the review taking place in the Planning and Development Board.
But what was some of the debate about this? What was there debate? Were there people who thought that this shouldn't be a historic designation? And were there people who did think that there should be a parking lot up there and agree with Cornell in that way?
Well, the parking, I mean, the designation was on the merits of the designation did not involve the parking lot, certainly on the surface of it. Obviously, people would have that in mind as they spoke to the designation, whether those people were residents or whether they were representatives of Cornell who came and spoke against the designation of this district. But there were other persons who tried to argue that some of the buildings in the district weren't important and it didn't deserve district status, landmark status. But the because at that point, no one had approached, obviously, the Landmark Commission with the parking lot. We were all aware of it, but that wasn't part of the district.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guests are Mary Tomlin and Marty Hatch. We're talking about the Redbud Woods, the conclusion of the fight to save the woods. Marty, do you know anything about when alum got involved in this? I know something like over 500 alum got involved in this issue, too. How did that take place?
I believe that was a part of a student initiative during the commencement time.
You know which year it was?
This year.
This year. So it's recent that they started getting other people involved. Huh?
Right, mm-hmm. Right. The direct, I hope I'm not wrong on this, but the once again, the Redbud Woods site, which I'd like to recommend anybody take a look at, once a whole range of different parts of information, different segments of information, take a look at it. That has more about the alumni involvement. But I believe around the time of commencement this year, there was an intensification of efforts, and that mm-hmm. Most of the signatures were gathered at that time. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say one more thing quickly about the change of mind. Not
yes.
Because it's a personal
I
question.
I think it's very interesting.
Because
though.
What happened, I think, was that I think people don't know about what are alternatives to come bringing your car and parking, and people don't think about that anymore. I mean, you can tell the society as a whole is not thinking about these issues critically, and so we do need people to tell us to start thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And I began to see, you know, this is a part of what I would have read into what Mr. Eisner was Professor Eisner was talking about. We need people to help us wake up, you know, and say, you know, look, this is, and universities are places where we want to help people wake up and see
and
the realities, the broad, encourage that kind of critical thought. And when the faculty became more and more deeply involved, I mean, this was after June, they were coming up with alternatives for parking, with alternatives for courses that would deal with Redbud Woods as a site for the study of the question of the place of nature in mm-hmm. the city. All these things are far more exciting and important to the future of the society than to have a parking lot which will satisfy the needs of you know, 120 some students
yeah.
and several faculty. Not any creative thought was given to that. It was all done in a very mechanical, old style way mm-hmm. about development. Mm-hmm. And so I guess my change of mind came because I said, you know, this is an educational institution where we're at the forefront, or should be at the cutting edge of educating people about the needs for the future in society. And here we are just following old models.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said, the parking department is working on things like that, but they needed to redouble their efforts. If, in fact, they had been successful by providing bus permits, why not provide more bus permits?
Yeah,
instead of saying, well, we're going to phase this in over a period of time, just do it. So in fact, the student occupation proved that the administration, and it will prove that the parking lot won't be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may be there'll be enough people to fill it up, but if you do take the initiatives that the students were suggesting were important,
mm-hmm.
And that the administration agreed to,
yeah.
To get
and do you
them
think do you think they will follow that agreement? And
well, they're not. Certain portions of it are a little questionable. There's a task force that supposedly it's been put into effect, and you'll see something in the Chronicle about it. In the next few days, the task force was proposed by the students, accepted by the administration as part of the agreement to mm-hmm. get them out of the woods,
mm-hmm.
and or get the students and townspeople, I should say, the working group out of the woods. And the task force, two of the conditions were that there'd be two members, active members of the faculty working group. No members of the active faculty working group were chosen by the
really?
Administration. There would be one student. There is, in fact, one student chosen. And then there are several other people chosen. It's right now, it's a matter maybe of negotiation, or maybe it's going to be just announced to us in the following.
Mm-hmm.
But the membership, the question of the membership is a little bit dicey from my point of view.
Wow, that's really awful.
It's really a shame. And but another question is in the charge. The charge is to find a compromise between the needs of environmental, of sustainable environmental and parking.
Mm-hmm.
So one could say, how can one compromise sustainability of the environment? It seems, indeed, it's going on all the time. We're compromising the sustainability of the environment by driving cars that, you know, get only 10, 15 miles to a gallon.
Oh, sure.
But the university doesn't have to be a participant in all of that.
There needs to be leadership.
There needs to be leadership. There needs to be education.
To escort us into different thoughts in regard to this, of course.
Exactly.
Because people are not going to do it just automatically. Big question for me in regard to this. How do you think this issue and the way the administration dealt with this has affected relations with the city? And I will talk to you after about with faculty. Mary?
Okay. If I may just go back briefly, one thing that ties into something that Marty said with regard to alternatives to this parking lot. Mm. At the same time, the planning board of the city was reviewing the overall project, and the planning board did refuse to approve the parking lot mm-hmm. in February of 2003, and then Cornell appealed that decision, and Cornell's appeal was upheld in state Supreme Court here. But one of the things that the planning board had sought was, or that they said about this plan, was that there was insufficient consideration of alternatives, which is what you were talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And what is interesting about this from the Landmarks point of view is that one of the arguments that went back and forth in the various court cases here and here, the Landmarks Commission had denied the certificate of appropriateness for the parking lot. Cornell appealed and was supported by Judge Mulvey.
Mm-hmm.
The city then appealed, and the appellate court then sided with Cornell again.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the interesting arguments that happens there is whether the parking lot was part of the educational mission of the institution and the degree to which it was essential to the educational function of the university.
That was one of the notes
that
they
placed
on
that? That was one of the arguments, and that becomes one of the arguments with regard to zoning and educational institutions.
Oh, how interesting, how sneaky.
So this ties together in a way that I hadn't thought about, particularly to Marty's comments about more recent efforts. But
how do you think this has affected the relationship between Cornell and the city?
Well, I think there was a lot of support for an alternative to the parking lot, not just on the part of the boards, the citizen boards that reviewed it, but certainly in this administration, members of Common Council and the mayor would have been very happy to see this resolved in a way that would not allow the parking lot to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were all disappointed that persons making the decision did not step up and really seize this as an opportunity to compromise to a greater degree than what they may feel like they've compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Because this involves not just the Cornell campus, but involves the neighborhood as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll bet neighbors are worried about pollution and stuff, with the cars going in and out of there, and who knows what else?
I don't know about that, but yeah. I was looking at it today, and I was thinking, what is this? And I said, this is a major wound. This is like a wound on the landscape. I mean, it's not just because it's a big dust bowl now, but it's funny. I mean, when I was looking at the site plans and talking about view shed back in 2002, 2003, I was, floating along on my own kind of narrow perspective of things and not looking close enough at the trees, I think, and at what the trees meant. And the experience from June till July, when things were destroyed, was quite a transformation for me about the nature of landscape. because you know, the administration was talking about this as trash trees and filled with trash and all of this other stuff. I was walking it. It wasn't.
Oh, it was beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it was.
And now what it is it is just amazing sore. When those trees came down, it was not because I was. I'm not a tree hugger. Let's put it that way. I'm a person who's grown. I've grown close to 6,000 trees on my own property by planting them myself. And so, I mean, I love the trees, but I understand, you know, I've also harvested trees for wood. And mm-hmm. and when those trees came down in their particular place, it was a real sad event.
It was,
really,
yeah.
Amazing.
A lot of us were up there when it started happening.
Yeah, and they
really
crashed
was.
Down with these huge. Anyway, it's a major wound, and
yeah.
I'm sure it's going to be a scar.
Okay.
It won't ever heal.
Do you
It'll
have anything to say about what
scar.
This has done with
with the
relationship
faculty?
Between the faculty and the administration?
There's a lot of angry people.
Yeah.
A lot of angry people. I mean, as I said, we have a letter to the trustees, which has 110 signatures to it, which isn't focused directly on Redbud Woods, but what talks about, I guess,
just
it doesn't talk literally
handled,
about
perhaps.
This, but mm-hmm. I would describe it as a problem of arrogance of power.
Mm-hmm.
To see
what happens.
Yeah.
Well, what is for the future? I've heard that there's going to be a big town meeting about this. Do you know anything about that?
GIAC. Town meeting at GIAC. Let me see. I'm sorry, I don't have
Coming
all these
soon,
details.
Right?
It's very soon.
Yeah.
And it'll be to get everybody else together, everybody together. I guess I haven't written it in my book yet. But keep your eye out for it, everybody, and come along.
Yeah, so that'll be happening in the next few weeks or the next few months?
Next, I think it's in a week or two.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. So there will definitely be announcements, and people. Anybody is welcome, even people who
sure,
didn't work on
sure.
the issue.
In fact, yes, we're trying to build all of the, you know, bonding of community as an alternative to other
issues that might come
issues,
up, perhaps.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. And the city going to
participate? I don't know.
I
have not heard of it, so I don't know. One thing I was going to say that was so disappointing all along with this is that, and when Marty mentioned that this is a scar on the landscape, when the plans are presented, they're plans as if it was a sort of neutral surface of asphalt, and in terms of the neighborhood, and there was a concern for headlights and so on, mm-hmm. but all the cars that were drawn were sedans of smaller size, and their headlights obviously aren't as tall as SUVs. And I think a parking lot is not just a sort of asphalt place, it's a place of very shiny vehicles who move and who cause pollution. And I think when we think about parking lots, I think we have to take a realistic attitude toward what a parking lot is. Mm-hmm. It isn't a sort of a latent, you know, a lawn that happens to be paved over.
Yeah, and a dead place. It's mm-hmm. it's a living place with pollution going in and out and light and noise and people mm-hmm. hanging out in parking lots and all kinds of problems that could crop up.
You know, there's no landscape plan for Cornell. There's no systematic landscape plan. There's a planning committee on which faculty participate, but that committee basically has very little power and very little exercises. Very little. There's a parking committee. That committee doesn't do much of anything either. The fact is that Cornell administration runs itself in a very independent and unresponsive way, and I think what we need to do is get more people together, create more of a community.
Mm-hmm. And maybe this issue will galvanize that. We have run out of time. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.